You are listening to Attention, the audio journal for architecture. This is issue number 8, talking about my generation. Interviews were conducted by Joseph Bedford between 2021 and 2022. I'm Tim Cox, the guest editor and narrator for the issue. This is episode number 8, Theory. Across the interviews, Joseph framed the discussion around theory as a question of why this generation hasn't written polemical pieces of design theory. In this episode, we'll ask what has changed between now and an era of architectural production where texts like Animate Form, Complexity and Contradiction, or Delirious New York provided disciplinary landmarks around which debates could orbit and architectural knowledge could develop. As discussed previously, this cohort resisted ideological conflict and was open about their lack of interest in arguing for one architectural position over another. They viewed discourse that attempted to convince others to adopt their position as problematically imposing oneself on others. Regarding their own lack of theoretical production, the interviewees made comments about changes in academic and labor structures, in media and audience, and in the professionalization and proliferation of writing about architecture. They aired critiques of prior generations of architectural writers and theorists and described a more pluralistic, collaborative approach to writing that they prefer. While this generational difference in approach to theory will be the chief focus of the episode, the more difficult topic implicit in these discussions is the question of what role theory should play within architecture in our current moment. First, we will hear about the circumstances external to this generation, which they cite as contributing to a decline in theoretical writing. One argument for design theory's transformation over the past decades is that the production of theory has changed alongside shifting labor practices, academic requirements, and personal priorities. Essentially, the time it would take to develop the thinking for and to then pen a major text like Delirious New York is time that this generation would just rather spend on other things, and especially those which are legible to a tenure review committee. Here's Katie McDonald, Mira Henry, Meredith Miller, and Daniel Jacobs.
Definitely, I think the format of academia, the constraints of a tenure timeline, the newfound commitment to compensate and treat labor fairly, of which I'm certainly an advocate, but is something that might not be reflective of prior generations, definitely changes the output that's produced, right? So ultimately, if you're building a lot, maybe you don't have time to actually write the manifesto because a lot of that work is, you know, involved. Or if you're have a more of a writing practice, you might have to be publishing in peer-reviewed journals or getting your book peer-reviewed, which might also be more difficult with a manifesto.
One has to choose where time gets spent, right? And we're not going to be writing a tome, but that's because we're very, 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 very much trying to build a practice. The economy of building a practice in a generation that really is adamant about non-exploitative labor practices, where you don't have a bunch of people working for you for free, and how to do that work. There's an economic dimension to the question of production.
While I have done some writing and I may continue to do writing, I'm more interested in kind of focusing my time to get the building practice going.
There's a reluctance to be a singular voice to try to assess and critique the discipline as a whole. And I think that this is maybe also part of the changing landscape of production of the academies in general, which is about, you know, I don't know the history of this really, but the kind of changing requirements of the tenure track process, the kind of proliferation of the edited volume or the kind of books that relate to your own practice.
Anna Niemark puts a fine point on the question of how tenure track requirements have impacted architectural writing.
One can write a book to get tenure, or one can write a book that puts people together into a book to get tenure. And there's a kind of necessity that's institutional necessity to produce a publication, and that publication can much more easily be produced by a group of people. So what happens is the same group is producing everybody's tenure. This is my cynical response. It's like, do we need another publication about our generation, or do we need people to actually start writing books again and make projects?
Another common position was that the proliferation of doctorate-level writing about architecture has discouraged practicing architects and master's-level academics from writing theoretical polemics. This professionalization of writing contributes to a perception of hard-line boundaries between architects, theorists, and historians. Here are Michael Young and Mira Henry.
Maybe it's intimidating to a number of architects who want to write a kind of theoretical discourse around the questions of aesthetics in the work they do, but know, because they've now been trained through Ivy League educations and or educations where theory was at such a high discursive level and with such eloquent articulation, that they're stepping into a terrain that actually is maybe done at an expert level now that wasn't quite done at this level 40 years ago.
Our generation is also managing questions of medium specificity, you know, ourselves as trained as architects and producers of aesthetics and material in the world, as well as engaging in the bureaucracy of building, that's a very different training than, let's say, a historian or somebody whose work is primarily in writing. And I think that there's this idea that anybody can sit down and write a tomb. There's a sort of respect of like, well, you know, I'm not a historian, I'm not a theorist, I'm a designer, and so therefore, how can I still contribute through writing, because it's an extremely important form. But I do think that there is a cautiousness around, let's say, wielding theory in a way that our generation, I would speak for myself, I'm far more cautious.
The rise of the architectural historian in place of the architectural theorist is another specific shift which this generation outlined. Whereas a theorist might be interested in thinking through contemporary issues in design and aesthetics, this generation saw historians as gaining influence and prominence, and rejecting the label of theorist, even when their work moved in that direction, producing a class of intellectual authorities who are less eager to champion architecture or dive into its theoretical futures. Here's Hans Tersak discussing a conversation he had with Lucia Alay, followed by a comment from Meredith Miller.
I asked her in a symposium once, or in a seminar once, because she was presenting her work, you know, you didn't describe yourself as an architectural theorist. Why? And she said, no, I'm a historian. And I realized that as I had more conversations with members of Aggregate, they all identify as historians, not as theorists, not as architectural theorists. So that seems like a generational shift. They are all older than me, but my cohort, all read them, and they are sort of, you know, the theoretical authorities, or some of the theoretical, or one camp of theoretical authority that's pretty influential in at least American academia. And not only are they historians, but it seems to me that they are historians of technology and historians of science as it relates to architecture, science-architecture, architecture-science, or architecture-technology. That's fundamentally different from like Beatrice Colombina's generation, which is, you know, as far as I can tell, like continental philosophy and critical theory applied to architecture.
If you really study architecture history, if you really kind of go deep into the politics of what it means to build buildings, it's kind of hard to come out the other end as a cheerleader for building practice. I feel like those that I've known who've gone through PhD programs kind of come out the other end and with the conclusion that most architecture is, you know, politically fraught and ethically suspect. And so maybe that's just where we've ended up. And there's a lack of support or a kind of voice for helping to frame architecture and its role right now.
The landscape of internet spaces, contemporary journals, and social media was another contributing factor to theory's shifting position in this generation. There was a sense that perhaps these big books of theory were no longer the places where important questions were being asked, and that theorizing was now happening in shorter, more distributed forms, which don't lend themselves to traditional publishing or even to long-form thought. Here's Jerome Hafford, MacLean Clutter, and Hans Tersak.
I think the mediums by which I think the urgent questions are being asked are slightly different. Yeah, you know, I've been part of this project for Dark Matter University, and, you know, that's playing out in space and in Zoom and in lectures and on the internet in different ways than like a book, but maybe we should do a book.
We can also like point the finger at the 1500 word essay in, you know, some of our most important journals like Log, where that's like a marker of distinction to be published there. And yet the format is like quite light. It doesn't lend itself to working out ideas. So maybe there are also some things in the kind of publishing formats of architecture.
I think a lot of the practices that we've been talking about engage with theory, but they engage with specific micro genres of theory. I think theory is a lot like music right now. I think, you know, there's as many genres as there are artists and platforms for ingesting that kind of media.
Instagram meme pages were another site where this generation saw theorization happening. Many of these accounts are operated anonymously and skew young, wielding their anonymity as a license to air passionate critiques. They call out politics, labor practices, or job postings, which they consider problematic. Opinions diverged on whether these pages produced exciting polemics for our time or fostered unproductive cancel culture cynicism. Here are David Eskenazi, Kyle Miller, and Clark Venhouse.
We have manifestos already that are not in the form of writing, but they're in the form of Instagram accounts. And anybody who thinks it has to be in a written book published by a publisher is wrong. I think this is exactly the problem, is that we think of the discipline as a very narrow thing that exists in certain circles. And we have to end that, because that's just like exclusive and ridiculous.
Meme theory, like meme criticism, Thank Lloyd Wright and Boys Firm. And, you know, again, there's some humor in that and there's some really meaningful substance in it, but it's delivered in a way where you consume it and you forget it because the next one comes 15 minutes later. I think it's a matter of time. And I don't know if there's been enough of a backlash by youth culture against all things social media and hyperspeed.
I think it's easy to hide behind a no-name, a fake name, pseudo-name thing and sling arrows. And so I really appreciate platforms that promote architectural thinking and promote architectural ideas rather than platforms that take people's work or existing ideas and use them for a negative, pessimistic commentation.
Another effect of the media changes brought on by the internet and social media was a decline of reading books. This generation didn't see an audience for book-length architectural theory. Here's Stuart Hicks, Eric Herman, and Brittany Utting.
I don't know if books have the same power as they used to. This shift in media has made books not necessarily the primary media through which big ideas are delivered.
I don't know about an ambition to write something like that, because I don't know who would read it. Because I don't see anyone reading books anymore anyway.
I also think that the smaller the book, the more likely it'll be read.
That's true today.
Right? So I think that's also something to acknowledge.
There was also a pervasive sense that architectural writing was not at all on the decline, and that it was actually a genre that was oversaturated with authors and texts, so that any one contribution would struggle to rise above the others and take on canonical status. The speed at which texts are written and circulated has also increased, leaving discourse hurried and difficult to grasp. Here's Jaffer Kolb, Michael Meredith, Meredith Miller, Christy Ballier, and Hans Tersak.
You know, it's just so crazy how many architectural publications are. Like, how are any of these voices meant to stand out when they're just in a sea of other voices?
there is a neurosis or an understanding that I just feel like there's no way to write something important at the moment. I just feel like inevitably it's going to be pre-diluted.
In this moment, I just think there's so much noise. I think, you know, academic architecture has changed a lot in the last 30 years. There's a kind of productivity and a churn that's expected of all of us on that tenure track. And I think a lot of people are churning out publications, and whether that's books or edited volumes or essays. And I think some of those are, you know, taking up the task of positioning, theorizing, and so on. I'm just not sure if any of those are rising to the level of those books that you're citing, just because there's just so much of everything.
On one hand, I would say things are moving so fast that people don't have distance to articulate game-changing positions.
I don't think the world is in a place right now where that kind of text would make any sense for more than like 10 minutes. I think it's the speed with which things are moving. I think Zizek's actually kind of a perfect example. It's, you know, the like hyper-caffeinated way that he talks and writes, and the fact that he, you know, is issuing a new text like every 6 months, sometimes even more frequently, like that seems more appropriate.
Jaffer Kolb summarizes these sentiments well.
You know, the polyphony of voices and the opportunities through which to publish are so great that imagining a REM coming out of that, or, you know, a Venturi complexity and contradiction, it's so difficult to imagine that when there's just thousands of people writing constantly. And I would make the same claim about books. It's not that people aren't writing books. People are just writing so many books that we have no idea what those books are. Like, I don't know who their audiences are. I don't know where they go. I don't know how they can actually make more of an impact than anything around them.
As a final point, this generation also tied back the lack of major theoretical contributions to their simple lack of interest. Jimenez Lai, Michael Young, and Michelle Chang all describe a generational refusal to write long-form design theory, which they frame as modesty.
Everyone I know, even the leading voices of our generations, decline, let's say, the baton to supposedly write a heavyweight paper or book. I feel like everyone that I know would have the kind of modesty to decline that.
I don't know if anybody here is trying to write Complexity and Contradiction or an update on that. Michael Meredith publishes books all the time, and some of them are fantastic, but they're not, their discourse is not the theoretical discourse situated around language. It is much more so through representation and through building.
I don't think people want to speak for their generation. I'm having a hard time doing it myself. Yeah, I definitely think that kind of writing, I don't know anyone who's interested in it, interested in trying to do that right now. One, it feels overarching or overreaching, like an overreach. Like it feels like a kind of, whether it is or not, the possibility of a grand narrative. We don't love that. It can also feel a little bit like political suicide. You know, a book is just like opening a huge wound for everyone to put salt in.
So far, we have covered the many reasons we heard from this generation as to why there is less long-form, theoretical writing than there was in the past. They discussed time constraints, the professionalization of writing, the rise of discourse online and on social media especially, and the perception that theory was oversaturated and moving too quickly for anyone to make a real contribution. As we just heard, the implication in these lines of thinking is that this generation is simply not interested in working against any of these societal pressures in order to do the type of design theory that academics have done in the past. In support of their declining of the baton, they articulated a series of critiques of architectural theory as it has existed historically. Some of these critiques will be familiar from our previous episodes on politics and ideology, where this cohort rejected singular, heroic, assumedly male authors, or insular, disciplinary conversations framed around binary oppositions. Here are Cyrus Panarroyo, Daniel Jacobs, Mira Henry, and Michael Meredith.
In this moment, people are, more and more people are suspect of those kinds of singular figures, right?
There's a reluctance to be a singular voice to try to assess and critique the discipline as a whole.
Frankly, the kind of the histories and who writes these histories and who writes these big tombs is also in question. You know, we're coming out of a generation of, you know, like I was never taught anybody who was not a white man, you know, never, ever, 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 maybe a woman, you know, once or twice, you know. So it's like really, really, really hard to like pull us out and into a much more diverse set of conversations. And so it's like, how do you then become the very tomb writer? I don't know. That seems super tricky.
I think what's most likely going to be the focus of attention for the next 5+ years is going to be on who gets to tell us what architecture is. I think that's a really good conversation to have.
Anna Niemark articulates this suspicion of a singular theoretical authority differently and sees this generation as interested in speaking for themselves and not conforming to others' opinions.
What makes a good theorist is trust. One must trust this theorist and succumb to their opinion. What makes a good theorist is also power. They must have power in order to speak and to be listened to. And so that requires an incredible amount of a kind of humbleness, I guess, on the part of the architects. And perhaps we're not that humble anymore. I don't know if we can succumb to somebody's opinion so easily and say that, allow somebody else to speak on our behalf.
This generation was also critical of prior paradigms of theory in architectural discourse, where critical theory or continental philosophy was instrumentalized as a formal generator. From Derrida's role in deconstruction and Deleuze's role in the digital project to contemporary architecture's interest in literal objects as a response to object-oriented ontology, it's hard not to feel like complex philosophical systems of thought have been boiled down to their most obvious metaphors when architects try to use theory to directly produce form. Here are McLean Clutter and John Lott.
The place perhaps where theory is less prominent is when you made the thing a triangle because Deleuze said to, or this shift is because of what Derrida said. Like, I don't think that that kind of deterministic appropriation of theory also is useful.
I think this generation is more interested in reading and method than representation of a theory. This generation isn't interested in the right, wrong, or the ideologies. Those theories produce certain ideologies that we've got to practice according to, you know, this book, you know, the book says so. And I think this generation is skeptical of those proclamations of ways to practice, more so than the readings that we get from the varied methods.
Eric Herman similarly describes feeling unsatisfied with complexity and contradiction because of the way architects tried to use it as an instruction manual.
The issue is like, if you go back and read those words, they can be so really resonant and interesting, but then you like equate it to Pomo architecture, and it's just not the same. Like I enjoy the text, and I enjoy the intentions, and I enjoy the originality of the thought, but then I see like everything that follows it, and I get worried about the connection between those polemical texts and the work that they organize.
The final major critique we heard of design theory was that it was not relevant in this historical and political moment. Specifically, design theory did not respond to crises or work towards their remediation and failed to properly account for the role of architecture in the material world. Here's Brittany Udding and Kyle Miller.
I think one of the reasons people have become maybe less interested in kind of architectural theory as such is more because it doesn't meet the issues of our day. It's not enough to think about architecture in such a sort of purely disciplinary way. I think for me, in my readings and writings and teachings, increasingly I'm looking, you know, I teach architecture, but through the lens of anthropologists, historians, artists, sociologists, right, geographers, right? To me, they're dealing with issues that are still, they still relate to kind of the city, right? They still relate to issues of representation, of mapping, of construction, of kind of the politics of the built environment, but they're not through a purely sort of inward-looking disciplinary language, right? The kind of, I think that the sort of, in many ways, these sort of older theories of architecture, their language is inadequate. It's inefficient to kind of deal with the kind of profound changing issues of the world.
It's debatable whether or not that's still a critical component of the discipline, that the more theoretical, historical side, history and theory as an agent, as opposed to just the effects of design in the built environment, aside from its theoretical implications. I mean, that's something that I think's on the chopping block right now, too. I'm sure a lot of more people are inclined to say, actually, none of that matters, because what matters is the tangible effect on the other end. I think there's less and less designers hanging their hats on the theoretical or historical origins of their interests. It's more about the effects and the extra architectural influences on the work today than the way in which the work positions itself historically.
Next, we'll turn to the question of what this generation does want from theoretical writing. Despite critiques of theory and the changing circumstances of its production, there was still a desire for critical thought about architecture, just in different forms than previous generations. They argued theory should permit plurality, come about through a process of collaboration, and include diverse voices. Pluralism was once again the dominant desire of this generation, the argument in favor of a plurality of approaches and polyphony of voices was nearly universal. Here are Andrew Holder, Brittany Udding, Daniel Jacobs, Mira Henry, Kyle Reynolds, and Curtis Roth.
Here's the model of like a good written project that, to my mind, has yet to be executed. It's precise in terms of its specification of the architectural work to be done. It has a narrow aesthetic band in which it operates. And on the back end, it admits plural subjects. And I don't know what that is yet.
I think it's so much stronger, so much more radical and important to have a plurality of voices, a kind of multiple ways of thinking about the world, than kind of one person sort of saying, this is what architecture is, this is how we frame it theoretically, and this is how you read the city. Like those, I think that the more that we kind of think of discourse as made from a plurality of voices and modes of thinking, the more agile, reflective, and kind of intelligent a discourse can be.
I think we're way more interested in the sort of fine-grained...
The pluriverse.
Pluriversal, multi-vocal, multi-voice worlds that I think we now have to inhabit.
I don't think that just because the big tomb doesn't exist, that the effort and energy to kind of orient, define, specify, it doesn't exist. I think it actually is existing. It's just existing, yeah, through many voices all at once. And so I think about it more through... ideas of gathering rather than clear ideas of defining.
I mean, I wonder if it's like the atomization of the set of interests within the discipline, right? Like that there's no kind of overriding project or series of projects that's really defining a generation of work. It does seem to be a much more local set of interests that can form into these small collectives or groups like we're witnessing here. I think it would be like very difficult to write that book or to define that thing, right? Because there's just so much. So just by the nature of the abundance of this moment, any theoretical writing or concerns is going to seem, I think, local or maybe constrained relative to everything else.
In a way, I think that each practice kind of cobbles together a kind of theoretical worldview, and there's certainly overlaps in that theoretical worldview, but I think that that cobbling together is maybe much more, my perception at least, is that it's more heterogeneous than previous generations.
Alongside the desire for many voices and perspectives in lieu of a single authority, there was also interest in collaboration and co-authorship. They were proud of how distinct these collaborative efforts to think through architecture were from previous generations' approaches to theory. Here are Meredith Miller, Christy Ballier, and Brittany Udding.
I don't really feel the need to place a big kind of stamp on my theory of architecture with a capital T and a capital A. And maybe that is generational, but I see that as actually a positive thing. I think the way we work is much more about kind of our collaborative relationships and what we want to achieve. And it's less driven by kind of attaching ourselves and our names to a certain theory of architecture.
For example, in the SciArc exhibition, No More Room, we sought out a conversation with someone of our generation and ask for them to have a debate with us related to the work. So we reached out to kind of Whitney Moon to look at the work, review the work, and sort of shook out a reading that was in some ways a shared reading. So we didn't, it wasn't the classical form of we did the work and then else just came in and blindly wrote about it, or not blindly, but just wrote based on what they saw. It was an active, we would like additional input on how you see this work in a larger context.
Co-production is a really important way to dismantle canon, right? To open it up, to allow for other voices. And I think that that's what's so amazing about the fact that our discipline is increasingly not interested in these kind of big, like these big volumes, right? These XL manifestos, right? It's a kind of much more kind of convivial and smaller and kind of agile way of collecting a way of looking at the world.
With this generation's evaluative criteria for writing firmly established, with singular, long, binary, and prescriptive as negative descriptors, and plural, short, tolerant, and open-ended as positive, we also asked this cohort their thoughts on the theoretical writing that was native to their generation. The respondents discussed the architectural theory they saw as important, their own attempts at producing theory, writing which they considered important outside of the discipline of architecture, and the tendency in contemporary architecture practices to produce shorter texts that are largely about one's own work. Mira Henry, Jerome Hafford, Michael Young, Eric Herman, and Jaffer Kolb spoke about the architectural theory they saw happening across books and exhibitions.
Maybe the big books don't exist, but significant little books exist. I'm thinking about like Mario Gooden's, you know, Dark Space.
I think we do have game-changing things being done and written. We had the Black Reconstruction Show a year ago, and that exhibition catalog, it's sitting over here on my table. That is a game-changing work and catalog.
I mean, I know that Andrew Holder did this inscriptions exhibition with Michael Hayes. And in doing so, he had to go through a huge process of categorization and organization and trying to situate different people's work into different to different locations and to different arguments. And so that kind of ties into these larger theoretical issues.
Paul's book on Boring and Andrew Atwood's book, like I think those are two like really generous texts. It's the kind of text that welcomes you into their work, but also frames it around an idea that like you can be part of that conversation as well. And that it builds a kind of a case for a specific thing, but it doesn't build a case for the authority of that thing. That would be the type of text that I think would be productive to work on. There's a real honesty and earnestness to those texts. And it's categorically different than some of the oblique, hyper-polemic texts of the past that I've confronted and had difficulties with.
Tons of architects publish books all the time. I don't think any of them have achieved the status of Delirious New York. So then the question is more, why are these books not popular? Or like, why are they not making such a fundamental impact? Our peers, like, or people 10, 15 years older than us, are publishing books constantly. You know, Paul Preissner just came out with one. Andrew Atwood just came out with his.
Several respondents also had made personal attempts to contribute to the canon of architectural theory and reflected on their own writing. Here's McLean Clutter on his book Imaginary Apparatus, Kyle Miller on his role in Possible Mediums, and Michael Young on his text, Reality Modeled After Images.
For myself, I tried and I'm just not good enough. I wrote a book. It was trying to be like an important piece of urban theory. And I don't, you know, I tried. I don't think it was good enough. Yeah, perhaps we're awaiting like the primary theorists of our generation that will reassert the importance of the big book.
There's not enough people that I think are also trying to help designers build a theory of their work or build conceptual clarity around their work on like as a partner to them. And I think that's kind of why I have attempted to do that as an amateur. I remember actually when we were putting the Possible Mediums conference together, Jeff Kipnis just kept telling us like, you need someone else to do this for you, but no one else was doing it.
I mean, I just wrote this book, so I'm trying to struggle with writing more and more and trying to write in a way that's expansive beyond writing about my own work, but writing about the ways in which I see, at least for me, aesthetics and images and issues of representation in architecture today.
The writing and thinking that this generation was most interested in, though, was extra architectural. There was a sense, which we've already heard several respondents speak to, that theory outside of architecture was more relevant than any theorization happening inside the discipline. We can also see this trend as part of this generation's strong belief that the discipline of architecture was too insular and exclusionary. Here are Meredith Miller, Cyrus Penarroyo, Daniel Jacobs, and Hans Tersak.
I don't feel like I'm lacking direction because of those missing theorists or critics. And maybe that has to do with more of this kind of like reaching across disciplinary boundaries, that the things that I'm reading or listening to or looking at are in other disciplines, or, you know, that there's conversations that are happening that aren't limited to architecture, academia.
It seems like maybe more and more a lot of like young designers and educators, maybe the people that are within our generation, I think are turning to theory from other fields. Like I think about people like Sarah Ahmed or bell hooks, people who are not explicitly architectural theorists, but who are writing about space.
I'm thinking about Extra Statecraft or Benjamin Bratton's The Stack. These are like still large texts that deal with our contemporary conditions in space, architecture and spatial form, but they do bring in a bunch of other material.
If one sort of peruses the Verso Books catalog, it seems like theory is maybe going through something similar that architecture and art are, which is just like massive, massive pluralization and splintering.
Another emphasis that this generation shared was an interest in shorter form writing. Respondents were excited by the turn towards shorter writing and saw it as more agile and responsive to urgency. But the impact of social media on attention, reading habits, and literacy in general is an unavoidable touchstone for this conversation. Daniel Jacobs, Brittany Udding, Katie McDonald, and Michelle Chang all discuss the shorter length of texts.
The possibility of the pamphlet isn't a reaction or a kind of, is not evidence of the neoliberalization of the academy as much as I think it is the need for people to quickly express radical ideas and without the kind of the weight or the time that it would take to kind of put together a comprehensive theory. And that to me maybe is a reflection or reaction to the kind of quickness of production that we have to participate in, or a kind of you could say it's part of social media as a landscape and ethos, but I think that it's actually much more about sketching new worlds that I think you couldn't embed in something like the big book of theory as before.
It seems like the way that people produce ideas in architecture today is shorter in format, perhaps more casual in format, and with a quicker turnaround. And it might be that the way that those ideas are articulated also leaves room
for them to expand and change in ways that maybe some of the previous manifestos felt set in stone or some ways crippling, because, you know, once they're out there, are those the limits of your intellectual practice?
I'm working on a book right now that I've been working on for a while, which is just a series of small essays.
And Mira Henry sums it up in a sentence.
Yeah, we're definitely the generation of short form writing.
Members of this generation also felt their written work was intended as a facet of their own practice and not as a way of thinking or working that other architects should adopt. This generation did not want to define themselves as a generation, much less produce theoretical work that would define a generational attitude towards the discipline. Writing was instead understood as a tool for the development of individual practices work. Here's Anna Niemark, Meredith Miller, Curtis Roth, and Mira Henry.
We do try to write quite a bit and to position the work that we do in a kind of broader cultural historical context that has been always at the forefront. Now, are we doing it for the whole generation? Certainly not. We're just kind of speaking for ourselves. We're not making broad stroke arguments, and we're not producing like huge categories. We're just doing our own work. We're doing our own research.
The extent to which I need to theorize my work is in dialogue with my like friends and colleagues and collaborators in order to do more work.
One of the things that is distinct in the way that I write, and I think largely in the way that most of people who I would consider my peers write, I write as a way to kind of figure out some of the issues in my work and to maybe think more clearly about the work that I've been, the creative work that I've been doing. But I would never imagine that the work that I do is a way of working or like a mode of working that I think other people should take up. In a way, there's like something which is really specific about a lot of these practices and is not really like generalizable.
I do see it in the types of writing that gets produced in this generation, that it's a lot of it has to do with close readings of things that the individual is working on and not necessarily these kind of very, very large cultural remarks.
Throughout this episode, we've outlined the many contemporary difficulties there are in theorizing architecture and the critiques this generation has of how prior cohorts of academic architects have done that work. To conclude, we will hear a few critiques of the current state of theory. While we've chiefly heard excitement about the multiplicity of voices and the proliferation of shorter, less didactic texts, it's not difficult to also see these traits as a loss of rigor and a capitulation to the demands of neoliberal capitalism. Time will tell us if this generation was pioneering new modes of criticism and theory, which expanded authorship and readership, or if they were just adapting to a tightening job market during a time when the act of reading was rapidly losing cultural relevance. Here's Paul Preisner and Joffre Colt.
They're too accepting of the kind of mechanisms of aesthetics of capitalism or something and the kind of systems, and we're not really trying to fight these things so much anymore. So we don't have the ability to produce these big books because we've kind of acquiesced to it being okay that's the way these things work. We love the notion of taste as a way to consume.
It's no longer about a debate between two positions. It's like multiple positions, plurality of, you know, perspectives, and like a total polyphony of publications. I don't really know how one breaks from that, other than just we're all part of a late capitalist machine, which is churning faster and faster every day, spitting out more and more byproducts of industrial production. And now we just have like a billion things. We have too much plastic, too much waste, too many voices, too many practices, too many academics. It's just like, this is our era. It is too much. All we have is like too many options, and it means that it's impossible to actually make any decisions.
Returning to the framing question of what role theory can play in the 21st century, we might ask what it would look like for writing to resist the neoliberal academy's marketization of discourse. How can texts become shared reference points in our era of pluralism? In times of crisis, what should academic architecture focus on? And how can thinking that is developed in the discipline extend outwards and have wider impacts in the world? In our next episode, we will hear from this generation on the discipline, a concept they have an ambivalent relationship to. We will hear many similar sentiments to this episode. They argue for disciplinary expansion, see the current state of the discipline as plural, discuss the impact of increasing specialization on the field, and question how they should teach the discipline. You have been listening to Attention, the audio journal for architecture, issue 8, Talking About My Generation. Interviews were conducted by Joseph Bedford between 2021 and 2022. The editing and production was by Tim Cox. Narration was written by Tim Cox and edited by Joseph Bedford. Thanks to the Graham Foundation for Advanced Studies in the Fine Arts for their generous support. And thank you for listening. Thank you.